welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark LeVanier. In this hour, crime stories. We'll hear Counterspy later on. But right now, it's Dragnet from its first season on the air on NBC from September 1st, 1949, featuring Barton Yarborough and Jack Webb.
Here is another in NBC's great parade of new shows.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
NBC brings you Dragnet. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to auto theft detail. In 3 months, more than 250 cars have been broken into. Property amounting well into thousands of dollars has been stolen. Two youthful members of the gang have been apprehended. The all-important brains of the criminal ring, the leaders, are still at large. Your job, get them.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime, investigated and solved by the men who unrelentingly stand watch on the security of your home, your family, and your life. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Monday, March 2nd. It was cold in Los Angeles. We were working the night shift out of auto theft. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Ed Backstrand, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. I was on the way back from the interrogation room, and it was 10:58 p.m. when I got to room 26, chief of detectives' office.
Real tough kids, aren't they?
Yeah, they won't admit a thing.
Now, sit down.
Thanks.
When'd you pick him up?
About 8:30 tonight in the parking lot behind the Star Theater out on Sunset. He was lifting the radio out of a 48 convertible. He's had lots of experience.
The report says you picked up a 19-year-old girl with him.
She was waiting for the guy in a parked car across the street from the theater. The car was full of loot.
The first real break we've had on those auto burglaries in 3 months, and it's no good to us.
Well, neither one of them will talk. They won't even admit they know each other.
You run makes on them?
Just did. We've been questioning the boy for an hour, getting nowhere.
What's his name again?
Freeman, Stanley Freeman.
Yeah. Age 20. Address? Butte, Montana. Down here for a vacation.
He doesn't lie very well, Ed. He's never been to Butte, Montana in his life. Knows less about the town than I do.
Well, get to him.
Right, Ed.
Where'd you put the girl?
We had a policewoman take her to our office. We can talk to her when we finish with the boy.
Well, what's her story?
Hasn't any. She won't even open her mouth.
19 years old, probably needs a good spanking. Now get him to talk.
Right.
Did you run a make, Joe?
Yeah, he's clean.
Get wise, huh, Flatfoot?
Look, you're in a bad spot, son. That kind of talk isn't going to help.
Says you.
We caught you red-handed trying to steal a radio that didn't belong to you from a car it didn't belong to you. Is that right?
That's enough to send you to San Quentin, boy. You better give us the story.
Shut up.
We got all the evidence we need for him.
Maybe you don't realize how serious this is. We've had more than 250 car burglaries in this city in the past 3 months. Over $200,000 worth of property has been stolen. That's a lot of money.
So what?
So you're the number one suspect, young fellow. Your method of operation in breaking into that car tonight is the same used in most of the other burglaries. That means you're not going to be tried just for this job tonight.
What are you getting at, Flatfoot?
Listen, son. In the state of California, breaking into a locked car is a felony. You can go to state penitentiary for that. And we're going to file a complaint of burglary with the district attorney in the morning.
You say you're from Butte, Montana. All right, I don't believe you. But we'll make sure. Ben, go down to our office and call the news photographers. Stanley here is going to have his picture on the front page of every newspaper in Los Angeles tomorrow.
Right, Joe.
No. You can't. I won't let you. I got my rights.
What's the matter, youngster? Everybody wants his picture in the paper.
Yeah, well, I don't. I won't let him.
We got your picture already for him, remember? I took it when they fingerprinted you.
You can't use it. You can't. I'll get a lawyer.
Reporters will be over in a couple of minutes. We have to give him your story and your picture, too. This one.
You won't! You won't! Give it to
him! All right, all right.
Give it to
him! All right, Freeman, get your hands off him. Now, sit down.
All right. Now let's have it straight.
Don't let him use the picture. Don't let him. You can't. You can't.
We got to have the truth, son. Now, look, you're 20 years old. You know right from wrong. You'll have to take your medicine. If you cooperate, we'll do all we can to help.
I live out in the Wilshire district. All I wanted was a little extra money. We didn't take much. We didn't think it was so wrong.
It was stealing, Freeman. You know that's wrong. Where do you live out there?
Piper Avenue. 821 Piper. You won't give him my picture.
You live there with your family?
Yeah, my mother. Father's dead. Promise me you won't give him the picture. My mother, she'd see it. Promise me.
You're working with a gang on those auto burglaries. We know that. Now, who are they, where are they, and what's the setup?
I can't. They get me for it.
Who'd get you?
I can't tell you. I can't.
Who's your girlfriend, Stanley, the one you're with tonight?
Joanne. Joanne Miller.
Where does she live?
Piper Avenue, same as me. Lives on the same block, 866.
Is that her home? She live there with her folks?
Yeah. Mother and father. They work.
And you got her into this. Isn't that the story she gave us, Ben?
I did not. I didn't. It was her. She said a bunch of kids were doing it. It was quick money, something to do at night. She started it.
All right, Romero. I'll go see the girl. You stay here with Freeman.
All right, Joe. Just stay put in that chair for him.
Hi, Marge.
Hello, Joe. You and Romero handling this case?
Yeah. I'd like to talk to the girl a few minutes. Marge, would you stand by?
Right, I'll sit over here.
Thanks. All right, miss. What's your name, age, and address?
I told this lady cop 15 minutes ago I'm not saying anything.
All right, then we'll tell you. Your name's Joanne Miller. You live at 866 Piper Avenue. You live with your father and mother. Both of them work.
You're a liar. That's not me.
You're 19 years old. You live on the same block as your boyfriend, Stanley Freeman, and you're the one who got him mixed up in this gang. Isn't that right?
No, it's not right. It's not. I didn't do anything.
Well, that's only half the story. Freeman told us everything. You want to hear the rest?
No. Stan wouldn't tell you. He wouldn't.
He told us how you got him mixed up in it. Quick money. That's what you told him, didn't you?
No, it was him. I can prove it. The rest of the kids will tell you. He got me in this. Ask them, they'll tell you. It was Stanley and Fred Milford and George Jansen. They started it, all three of them.
All right. Will you tell the story to a police stenographer?
I'll tell him everything. He's not blaming this on me.
Marge, will you go get the stenographer?
Right, John.
Now, how many persons in this gang of yours?
Oh, about 10 or 12. And it's not my gang, either. He got me into this, and now he's trying to lie his way out, blaming me.
How long have you been doing this, burglarizing cars?
Me? Oh, only about 2 weeks. It was supposed to be fun, something to do at night. The rest of them have been at it a couple of months.
Who's the head of the gang?
I told you, it's him, Stanley, and Fred Milford and Jansen, all three. I only started going out with him 2 weeks ago, maybe less.
All right, Joanne. Tell it to the stenographer the same way.
Stenographer will be in a minute, Joe.
Okay, Marge, thanks. Stay with her.
Right, Joe.
Just about a closed case, Ben. Girl gave us a full confession.
She didn't. Oh, you're not tricking me again. She didn't.
She told us you're one of the leaders of the gang, Stanley. Said you got her into all this. The other two are George Jansen and Fred Milford. About a dozen kids in the gang, all of them about your age. Isn't that right?
She's lying, can't you tell? She's lying. She got me into the gang. Well, she did. She's Milford's girlfriend. Ask her. Oh, she can't lie out of that one. She got me into it. I can prove it.
Who's the real leader of the gang?
Milford. He started it. He organized the whole thing. He collects the stuff we get, and he delivers it. Jansen helps him do it.
What do you mean, he delivers the stuff? Where does he deliver it?
Somewhere in Dogtown, I think. Down around South Main, near the railroad yards.
Who's it delivered to?
Well, I don't know exactly. I heard Jansen mention the name once. Myra, he said. It's supposed to be a big secret. Myra, that's all I remember.
Where does Jansen and Milford live?
Well, Jansen rooms down on East Flower. 1042, I think. It's a rooming house. And Milford lives two blocks over from me on Quincy. 234 Quincy. He lives with his grandmother.
Got that, Ben?
Right.
All right, let's pick up Milford and Jansen. It was 10 minutes past 1 when Ben and I returned to headquarters with George Jansen and Fred Milford in our custody. In Jansen's room at 1042 East Flower Street, we found two fur coats, a box full of new car accessories, an S&W 38 revolver, and a 45 automatic. When we picked up Fred Milford at his home, we discovered five deluxe car radios hidden in the garage, plus a valuable assortment of cameras, cigarette lighters, and clothing. Both Jansen and Milford refused to talk, but when we got them to headquarters and showed them the signed statements of Stanley Freeman and the girl, Joanne Miller, they broke.
Milford, where else did you and your gang operate besides the Wilshire District?
No place, only out there, that's all.
Same type of car burglars have been committed all over the city. You telling us your gang didn't have a hand in them?
It's the truth. Our territory was Wilshire District. We didn't go outside.
You mean some other gang's responsible?
I don't know. All I know is we didn't have any part of them.
Is there another gang, Milford?
Maybe. I don't know. You find out. It's none of my business.
It is your business, Milford. You admit you and your gang committed 55 jobs in the past 3.5 months. That leaves about 200 jobs to be accounted for.
That's right. You figure it out.
We have figured it out. I think you and your gang of young thieves pulled every one of those 250 jobs. There isn't any other gang. That's the story the district attorney's going to get.
You're crazy. There is. I know there is.
Then give us the information and save yourself a lot of trouble.
Well, we're not the only ones. That's all I know.
Milford, do you know how many years you get for auto burglary?
I told you, we're not the only ones. There must be a couple of others besides us. Vince Mahoney, he's got a gang.
Where does Mahoney operate?
West Hollywood and Beverly.
Where does he live?
I don't know. Honest, I only met him a couple of times.
Where'd you meet him?
I don't remember.
Where'd you meet him, Milford?
Delivery. I met him down at the delivery place a couple of nights.
When you delivered the property you stole from Cars, is that right?
Yeah.
Where was that?
Down by the railroad yards.
Where?
Chavez Street. It's a little alley off East Main.
Who'd you deliver the stuff to?
I told you, her name's Myra. That's all I know. We meet her and some guy on Tuesday nights. We give them the stuff and they pay us off. Mahoney delivers the same night I do.
Do you meet her every Tuesday night?
Yeah.
You're going to meet her this Tuesday, tomorrow night?
I don't know. I guess so.
Same place?
Yeah.
Are you the only one she deals with?
I know what you're thinking. You want to use me to trap Myra. Well, what's it worth?
You know better than that.
How about it, Milford?
Oh, what else can I do? Give me another cigarette.
By 3:30 that morning, the signed statements and confessions were piling up fast. Milford gave us a list of the names and addresses of each member in his gang, and within an hour, they were all under questioning at headquarters. Most of the suspects, about one-third of them girls, ranged in age from 18 to 21. As they told their individual stories, the scope of the case grew until it covered most of the city. By late afternoon of the next day, Tuesday, March 3rd, three more gangs operating in Venice, Bel Air, and North Hollywood had been apprehended. They confessed to more than 175 burglaries from locked cars during the past 3.5 months. At 5 o'clock that afternoon, Ben and I met with Chief Backstrand in his office.
How many admissions you have now?
Over 50, Ed. Here's the gang leader's statement.
Mm-hmm. Up this story.
Yeah, it's pretty much the same. They all say this woman, Myra, set up the operation.
You mean she got the kids and put them to work burglarizing cars?
Well, not exactly. She picked the leaders, contacted them in bars or on the street, asked them if they wanted to pick up some spare money getting auto parts for it.
Then she didn't tell them to go out and burglarize cars?
Well, not in so many words, Ed, no. After they brought in auto parts for a couple of weeks, she told them to bring her everything they could find, outside the car or inside. Those are the words she used.
Five of the kids dictated those words into their signed confession.
Well, that should hold in court. What else did you get on this woman?
Oh, she taught them how to work, told them to wear gloves, all the angles.
Well, we got most of the small fry. Now, where do we find this Myra woman? Any description on her?
Yeah. Kids say she's about 33, 34. Good-looking redhead.
5'5", about 120. Well-dressed.
No description on the guy she runs with.
You run a make on her yet?
Yeah. No previous record. We set up a stakeout for her tonight. Two of the gang leaders have volunteered to go along, this Milford and Vince Mahoney.
Good. Down on Chavez, where she usually meets them?
Yeah, that's right.
When?
11:15. That's the regular time for the meet, according to the kid.
All right, I'll be at home. Call me. I don't want to miss out on this one.
When Ben and I left Ed Backstrand's office, we went home for dinner and a few hours' sleep. At 9:30 p.m., we were back at the office. We met the men in the special detail, which Backstrand had assigned for the stakeout that night. We briefed them on their duties, and then we got Fred Milford and Vince Mahoney out of their cells. To avoid any possible suspicion of the presence of a trap, we had Milford's permission to use his car in the stakeout. The the car, which he had said he had driven to the delivery meetings with the woman, Myra, at least a dozen times before. We arrived at the stakeout area, Chavez Alley in East Main, at 9:58. The meeting was scheduled for 11:15. The moon was out, but the sky was overcast, and there was a cold wind blowing from the east.
Hey, what time you got, Sergeant?
About 10. Why, Milford? Getting nervous?
No, I'm just wondering.
How are you cops going to rig this thing?
In just a couple of minutes, we're going to plant you two in Milford's car parked up there in the alley. Now, you stay there until Myra shows up. We'll do the rest.
Yeah, I know, but what'll we say? Suppose she asks for some stuff. We ain't got any.
You won't need any. You won't have much time for talking.
I suppose she wises up. Maybe she'll pull a gun.
Maybe. Does she carry one?
No, never saw her with one.
Don't worry, Milford. We'll make sure you're not in danger.
She's got an awful temper, that redhead. Got mad at me once when I squawked at the prices she was paying us for radios.
What was she paying you, Mahoney?
For an 8-tube radio, good shape, $7.
She got all the gravy and you got all the grief.
You're not kidding.
Joe, are you?
Yeah, Steve, what do you got?
Well, the men are all staked out, Joe. Got the area covered from every angle.
All right. You got an extra man to stay in Milford's car?
I'll handle that myself.
Fine, thanks.
Okay.
All set, Joe?
Yeah. Now, Milford and Mahoney, we're going to put you two in your car now. There's going to be an officer with you, so there's no need to be nervous or afraid. You just sit in the car and act natural. When this Myra drives up, don't leave the car. Have her come to you. You got it?
Sure.
Okay.
All right, Joe, let's go.
Sure is cold out. I don't even have a heater in my car.
You stole enough of them.
Okay, Steve, here they are.
All right, boys. Milford, get in first behind the wheel.
Okay.
Mahoney in the middle. Now sit in the back.
We'll be parked in that garage across the street, Steve. Got a perfect view of the alley.
Okay, Ben. Check with you later.
All right. Mean night, Joe.
Yeah, come on.
What time you got?
6 minutes past 10.
Thank you. Hey, Joe.
What is it?
It's nothing. Thought that passing car was turning in the alley.
Relax. It's early.
Lonely place. Dark. Gets on your nerves.
That's it, Ben. 11:30. Nothing yet.
Somebody might have tipped her off.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid of. Now, let's wait it out anyway.
Joe, that blue coupe.
Yeah, just turned in the alley. Let's go. Come on, run, Ben.
Behind you.
All right, wake him. Well, quit your fighting.
Who'd you get, Steve?
Here he is. Just drove up in the coupe. Got out and called Milford Mahoney by the first names. He's in on it.
What about the girl?
No sign. Kid was the only one in the car.
All right. Tell them in the stakeout's offered tonight. Have them report back in. We'll take the kid with us.
Okay.
All right, young fellow. This way.
What do you cops think you're doing? I ain't done nothing.
Look, sport, we heard that from 54 different kids yesterday. We're tired of that line. Come on.
When we got back to the office, we took the boy to the interrogation room and questioned him. He gave his name as Matthew Leiter, age 21. He wouldn't break until Vince Mahoney definitely identified him as a member of his car burglary gang and a special favorite of the red-headed woman they called Myra. Then Leiter copped out and told Ben and I that he had talked with Myra as late as 10 o'clock tonight. He told us that she had heard that the police had picked up some of the gang members, and she asked Leiter to drive down to the Chavez Alley meeting place. He was supposed to tell Milford and Mahoney that the weekly delivery date was off until further notice. We questioned Matthew Leiter for an hour and a half.
You told us a little while ago that you talked with this woman, Myra, late tonight.
Yeah.
Where'd you talk to her? At her home?
Her home? Don't be stupid. Nobody knows where she lives. I met her at a bar.
Which bar?
Julia's, out in Santa Monica.
How did she contact you?
Called me at home. She's not such a bad dame. She treats you right.
Sure, that's why you're in jail. Did you ever call her on the phone?
I don't know her number. None of the kids do. She's smart. She taught me all I know about the racket. You'll have a rough time getting her.
Maybe, but we'll get her. Ben and I left the office at 2 a.m. and went home to bed. We reported in at 8 that morning to Ed Backstrand. The three of us went down the street to Kokin's restaurant for a cup of coffee. Nobody was in a good mood. We had most or all the small fry in the citywide burglary ring, but it seemed we were still a long way from cracking the inner circle.
The latter kid said that none of them knows where she lives, what her phone number is, nothing. Pass the sugar, eh?
I think we still have a few angles to study on that score. Right now, I've got some more bad news for you.
What's that?
You been through your mail this morning?
No, not yet. We haven't had a chance.
I saw the overnight reports. There were 32 car burglaries last night. 32. All the way from Wilmington to North Hollywood. Now, you figure it.
I can't. This girl Myra must have an army of kids working for her.
How much did they get, Ed? Any idea?
Rough estimate, about $3,000. Usual stuff people are foolish enough to leave in their cars. Watches, cameras, furs, expensive clothes.
M.O.'s the same?
Like the others. If the car happens to have a rigid handle lock, they slip a piece of pipe over the handle for a lever and break it. If that doesn't work, they pry open the wing window. Some of the windows were smashed out.
Sounds like you're in an awful hurry, Joe.
Yeah, maybe this Myra wants a few big nights before she peddles the stuff and gets out.
If we're going to get her, we can't waste time.
Any suspects picked up last night, Skipper?
None.
Well, where did they hit most of the cars?
Outside the Pan Pacific, the parking lot. Hockey game going on. Must have been 4,000 cars for them to pick over. They picked the best.
As usual.
Well, you better get on it. There's one way to handle it.
What's that?
She works fast. You work a little faster.
We got back to the office and we went over the reports one by one. Then we called the young gang members to the interrogation room and questioned them separately and re-questioned them. We got nowhere. Many of them had met Myra on the street, in a bar, but not one of them had any idea where she lived. At least that's what they told us. Ben had a hunch that Matthew Leiter knew more than he was telling. We had him brought to the interrogation room, and all that afternoon until 10 o'clock that night, with interruptions for his meal periods, we talked with Leiter. He would admit nothing more than what he'd already told us.
Yeah, it's got me beat, Joe.
Yeah. Now, let's check with Ed.
Good morning, Joe. Ben?
Hi, Mike. Skipper in?
Just went down the hall for a minute. Be right back. Hold it a minute, will you?
Yeah.
Chief of Detectives, I was handing. Yeah. For you, Joe.
Oh, thanks. Oh? Yeah. He does? We'll be right over. That was Sergeant Hopkins over at the jail.
Yeah?
Matthew Leiter's got something to tell us. Says it's important.
Have a chair here, Leiter.
Yeah, thanks.
All right, you wanted to see us.
I'm getting even with that dame Myra. I'm squaring with you.
Yeah?
She told me if I was picked up, she'd have me out in a couple of hours. She promised me a lawyer if anything happened. Said she'd get me bail.
All right, where can we find her?
I don't know if she's there now, but you can find out at Francisco Motors. Big used car lot. Garage, too. It's out on Melrose past La Cienega.
What's the tie-up?
That's where she fenced most of the stuff we stole. Some old guy she buddies with runs the place. Big shop in the back. Store a lot of hot stuff there.
Barney.
Yes, Sergeant?
We're through with him. Take him back. We checked with Chief Backstrand, and then we drove out to the Francisco Motor Company. We located it on the corner of Melrose and Geneva Avenue. It was a big layout. It consisted of a large used car lot sign bannering the slogan, Deluxe Auto Accessories, lowest prices in town. Along the back end of the lot, there was a large L-shaped garage. We found the man in charge, and he gave his name as Paul Hackett, the owner of the car lot. In the garage, we found the entrance to a large back storeroom. Was loaded with thousands of dollars worth of auto radios, spotlights, cratefuls of assorted car accessories. Special closets built into the walls of the garage contain racks of fur coats, suits, dresses. Below that, smaller boxes containing watches and cameras, all wrapped in tissue paper.
You can save all of us a lot of time and trouble by talking to us now, Mr. Hackett. Where is Myra?
I don't know who you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about.
Can you explain what we just found in your garage?
I didn't know it was there. I didn't know it was stolen.
Well, which is it, Mr. Hackett? Make up your mind.
I bought it, but I didn't know it was stolen. You can't prove I did know.
I think we can prove it, Mr. Hackett. Some of those stolen car radios stored back there, the serial numbers are filed off, and this workbench here is full of filings.
I didn't know.
You'll have to do better than that. How does Myra figure in?
I don't know. I don't know what you're talking about.
It's all right with us, Hackett. We found the stuff and we got you. If we don't find Myra, you'll be doing time for two people. Stand still.
You can't. You can't do this to me. I don't know anything about it.
Come on, Hackett. We're taking you in. All right, get in the car. Come on, in the car.
Am I going to jail?
You're going to jail.
All right. I'll take you to Myra.
Hackett told us that Myra lived at 1345 Munich Drive in Beverly Hills. He said that he was Myra's husband. He told us that he'd been in a legitimate garage business for 10 years before he married Myra. She talked him into the racket. He identified 1345 Munich Drive as their home. When we got there, we found stores of stolen property similar to those found in the garage. Myra was not there. Hackett had no idea where she might be. We sat down in the living room and waited. One hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. After 5 hours of waiting, the monotony started to wear on everybody's nerves, especially Hackett's.
And the whole thing, it was her idea. I should have known, all hers. She did this to me. I won't take it alone. Where is she?
You tell us, Hackett.
I told you, I don't know. She couldn't have gone. She didn't know. I'm not going to take
this alone.
All right,
quiet down, quiet down.
That you, Pa? Thought I heard you talking to some... Who's he?
The police, Myra. The police. Your smart kids told them the whole story.
What are you talking about, my smart kids? What are these cops
all
doing
right,
here in the living?
That's enough.
Get your dirty hands off of me. Get away.
Kids are right, Joe. She got a
temper.
Yeah.
Who do you think you're...
There, that ought to hold you for a while. All right, come on, you two. Let's go.
All right, copper. You win. Stupid husbands. How many times did I tell you? Don't trust those kids. Don't store the stuff in the garage. Don't open it for anybody. Get a lawyer. No, you knew better. Dumb jerk. The idea of having those cops camping in the living room waiting for me. Why didn't you warn me? I'm going to divorce you. That's what I'm going to do. I'll stick you for plenty. Jerk.
All right, inside you two.
Those kids were right. She's a pretty nice-looking woman.
Yeah. Nice face. Beautiful figure.
Mm-hmm. Sure talks a lot, though, doesn't she?
Yeah. Hey, Joe, remind me to take home some flowers to my wife tonight, will you?
The story you have just heard is true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent.
Paul and Myra Hackett were tried and convicted on 7 separate counts of receiving stolen property. They are now serving out their sentences in the state penitentiary. Realizing that most of the young persons involved in the case were influenced by the strong personality of Paul and Myra Hackett, a separate investigation was made into the backgrounds and home life of the young offenders. In most cases, they were found to be basically good, and they were placed on probation and returned to their homes. You have just heard the 13th in a new series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice for Dragnet comes from the office of W.A. Wharton, Acting Chief of Police, Los Angeles Police Department.
Tonight's program is dedicated to Detective Harry William Vosper of the Seattle, Washington Police Department, who on the night of July 21st, 1949, gave his life so that yours might be more secure.
Dragnet came to you from Los Angeles. This is NBC, the national broadcasting company.
Dragnet, on Tuned to Yesterday from September 1st, 1949 on NBC. Jack Webb, the star, a very busy radio actor up until the series and, of course, during it. 4 days before the NBC show we just heard, he was on CBS, making his 5th and final appearance in the Whistler series.
Hey, boy.
Yes, sir?
What's all the law for, do you know?
Oh, that? Yeah, the guy in 801 had too much to drink. The house stick couldn't handle him.
Oh.
Yeah, now he's going to have to tell it to the cops.
Drinking can become a horrible thing, son. Let that be a lesson to you.
Yeah. Huh?
And after several guest appearances on programs in an acting capacity, he began another radio show called Pete Kelly's Blues, where he starred as a cornet player in a 20-sounding jazz band solving crimes. That started in July of 1951. It's an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now on to the Counterspy series from ABC. Don McLaughlin and Mandel Kramer star from April 11th, 1950 in the Mile High Murders.
Counterspy! Washington calling David Harding, counter-spy.
Harding, counter-spy, calling Washington.
United States counter-spy. Especially targeted to investigate and combat the enemies of our country, both at home and abroad.
Tonight, the case of the Mile High Murders.
M5 Havana calling Easy George Abel Nan. M5 Havana calling Easy George Abel Nan.
This is Easy George Abel Nan. Come in, M5. Come in.
Important emergency instructions. Repeat, emergency. I'm sending boat out to rendezvous point 17, William Richard, which you will pass over in a few minutes. At point 17, William Richard, you will bail out of plane.
M5, what about the merchandise?
Disregard merchandise.
Now look, M5, I can't do a thing like that. After all, the cargo.
Cargo must be sacrificed to preserve safety of all concerned.
But maybe we can work it out another way. I don't want to have anything to do with...
This is in order. And final. Switch to automatic pilot for gradual dive and bail out. Did you hear me, Easy George?
Switching to automatic pilot for gradual dive.
That's better.
We'll bail out, M5. This is Easy George Abel Nan signing off.
Quiet down. I've got bad news for you. I can't smuggle you into the States. Now, you do just as I say, or I'll have to use this gun. All eight of you, move back in the ship. Back to the tail. Now, stay right there till I pull this lever. Parachuting out the bomb bay.
Please, have mercy.
Sorry, honest, but I can't help you.
Well, we do not have to be afraid to die, my friend. But if we were as wicked as these men, we should be afraid to leave.
I said I was sorry. That's all I can say.
He shot out of the plane. We will be killed. We will all die.
We must pray. Please, pray. Ave Maria, gratia plena. Domine tecum. Benedictus.
Keep those birds of yours quiet, especially that stinking vulture.
Since your return to Cuba from your aborted mission, you've not been yourself, Egan.
Those birds screeching that way make me think of those poor refugees in the plane, pleading for their lives.
Rosa!
See you, Senor Egan.
Give me another drink.
See you, Senor.
And hurry up, you fat sow. Egan is anxious to drown his conscience in my best wine.
It's easy for you to talk, Gregor, sitting here in your patio and listening to your crazy birds. You didn't have to dump 8 helpless people into the ocean. Sure, you can sleep at night.
Here is your drink, Senor Egan.
Thanks, Rosa.
Egan, in our business, sometimes drastic steps are necessary for self-preservation.
Talk is cheap. You didn't see their faces.
Perhaps, but I see the logic in disposing of them. If you had landed at the field in Florida with that shipment of aliens, you would have been picked up by the police. Would you have preferred that? Of course you wouldn't.
All right. But how did the police know about the trip?
Someone dropped the hint to them. Tell them, Ross.
At El Montero Cafe, I was told the flight was spotted.
Was anything said about me, Rosa?
I heard, Senor Egan, that when you had delivered some of Senor Gregor's clients safely to the United States, you took money from them. Blackmail money.
That's a rotten lie.
It had better be, Egan, for your sake.
You can't frighten me, Gregor, because I've got nothing to hide. I've always been on the up and up with you.
Very well, Egan. Now let's get back to business. We will continue our weekly passenger run from Cuba to Florida.
How can we? The cops are on to us.
We will no longer use a large plane. Temporarily, we will reduce our activities by using the small 5-passenger plane. And from now on, you will not land at our isolated field in Florida. Instead, we will avail ourselves of desolate stretches of beach along the coast.
Nothing's going to stand in the way of your making a fortune. Not even my neck, huh, Gregor?
Nothing, Egan. And least of all, your neck.
Operator, this is Captain Kincaid of the Miami Office Immigration Service. I want to put in a person-to-person call to Mr. David Harding, Chief of the Counter-Spies in Washington.
Hello, Captain Kincaid. This is Harding.
Oh, Mr. Harding, on that matter we discussed last week when I was in Washington, an emergency has arisen. We'd appreciate having counter-spy cooperation in this case now.
Anything at all, Captain.
Can you assign one of your Miami agents?
Better than that, Captain. I'm going to give this case my personal supervision. My assistant, Harry Peters, and I will leave immediately for Miami by jet plane. Go ahead, Captain Kincaid.
Well, Mr. Harding, this is the obsolete light army bomber I had flown over here to the Miami City Airport to illustrate my theory.
Peters and I are very anxious to hear it. Please continue.
Now, this is the way I reconstruct the story. A surplus army bomber, identical with this one, left from an improvised runway outside Havana, Cuba, last Friday with 8 aliens aboard. That we're fairly sure of through a contact in Havana.
But the plane never landed here in the States.
No, Mr. Peters. We had it under spotter observation in the Caribbean and suddenly lost it. And it didn't return to its Cuban base either.
What about the alien?
I'm just getting to that, Mr. Harding. All right, Bob. Mr. Harding, my theory is the bomb bay doors were opened like that, and the aliens were forced to jump to their deaths in the Caribbean, thousands of feet below. Mass murder.
Chief, this is about the lowest crime we've ever come across.
The absolute lowest. Well, Kincaid, I suppose the smugglers must have been tipped off that their plane was spotted and warned the pilot, maybe by radio, huh?
I figure it the same way, Mr. Harding.
It could be, Chief, that the pilot bailed out and was picked up while the aliens went down with the plane.
That's possible, Peters. That would account for the disappearance of the plane. Anyway, let's get started.
Havana, our next stop, Chief?
Havana next, Peters. With the cooperation of the Cuban police, we're starting on this alien smuggling racket by smuggling ourselves into Havana by speedboat.
Yes?
Senor Gregor, I'm coming to your house. I have something very interesting for you.
What is it, Rosa?
A letter, senor, from people in the United States to people here in Havana. What I've told you about Senor Egan is no longer a rumor.
There's the pier ahead, Mr. Harding. See what this glass on, thank you, Peter.
Well, it looks isolated enough for our purposes.
Good idea, Dave, taking this speedboat instead of a plane. Smugglers probably have their eyes on every airfield in Cuba.
Yes, there's no doubt about that, Peter. They have a terrific investment to protect.
We know there are thousands of aliens in Cuba. Poor devils waiting for the chance to get into the United States. Those who can't get in under the legal quota are willing to pay their last cent to be smuggled in.
Nice game. Traffic in human misery.
Dave, have you lined out a modus operandi for us?
Yes. Now, once we're smuggled in, we'll try to get ourselves smuggled out again.
Smuggled out? Dave, they'll know that we're not in.
They'll never catch on to you, Peter.
Uh-oh. Here I go again, huh?
You're still my star actor, Peter.
Okay, let's have it.
Well, by the time we get to Havana, you're going to look and talk like an alien. An alien willing to pay any price to get refuge in the United States.
Afternoon, Senor Gregor.
The letter, Rosa.
See, the letter. Senor Gregor, you are a man of business. Rosa is a woman of business. She is not beautiful.
Rosa, you've always reminded me of my pet vulture here, the most disgusting of creatures.
You pay me a compliment, Senor Gregor. She's a cunning bird also, eh, senor?
All right. How much for the letter?
$200.
The longer I know you, the more repulsive you become.
And the more valuable, senor.
Here.
Muchas gracias. Here's the... Yeah.
Pilot made us give him our last dollars when we landed in the United States. We had to do it because if we didn't, he said he would report us to the American government.
You are being cheated, Senor Gregor.
You stupid sow. You think only the money worries me? Letters like this cause trouble. Talk gets around. Egan has put my entire business in grave danger.
My knife, senor. For $100, I could use it well.
I don't need you for this. Do not worry, Rosa. When the time comes, I will put an end to Egan personally. You see this dish of raw meat? Come with me over to the pool and you will understand quite clearly.
The pool?
My fish pond.
But you do not feed fish beef like this.
Rosa, my fish, you do feed beef like this. Those creatures you see swimming in my pond are piranha fish, a very unusual species from Brazil. Watch what happens when I throw the fish into the water. Now watch.
Like wolves, they make a attack.
They say, Rosa, that a small school of piranha fish can strip a human body of flesh in 4 minutes. An amusing thought, eh, Rosa?
Very amusing.
Observe. The fish seem to be still hungry. See them skimming the surface? Perhaps they should have bigger bait. Huh? What do you think, Rosa? Huh?
I beg your pardon, sir.
Yeah?
Please, a lighter for my pipe.
Why? Oh, certainly. Here you are. All clear, Mr. Harding?
All clear, Peters. No one in this section of the park. We can talk right here.
How did you make out as Mr. Kovac?
Passed my first test with flying colors, Dave. I registered at the hotel patronized by refugees. I managed to make friends pretty quickly.
Any leads?
One of my new friends advised me that I might get what I wanted if I paid a visit to El Montero Cafe. The place is run by a fat, middle-aged woman named Rosa. My friend also said that a visit to Rosa is the first step in making entry into the States.
Rosa must be the contact between the aliens and the smugglers.
Looks that way, Dave.
All right, Peters. Or rather, Mr. Kovac, I guess it's time for you to visit this Rosa at El Montero Cafe.
And what do you want with me, Senor Kovac?
I have come to you for help, Rosa.
Help?
I wish passage to the United States.
To get to the United States, Senor Kovac, one has only to obtain passage on plane or boat. Why come to me?
I was told by friends that you could advise me of the steps necessary to get into the United States without detection by the authorities.
Senor, such a means of entry is dangerous. Illegal, and they say expensive.
I have $25,000.
$25,000? It would be a shame that a gentleman so anxious as you should not get what he wishes. Where are you staying in Cuba, Senor Kovac?
The Hotel Paloma.
Be in your hotel room at 10 tomorrow morning, and an American named Egan will call on you and explain the arrangement.
Well, thank you, Rosa. Thank you. You have no idea how much this means to me.
Then you passed your second test with flying colors, too, huh, Peters?
I guess I did, Dave. And your idea of mentioning $25,000 didn't do any harm. You managed to get a line on Egan after I called you earlier?
According to the Cuban police, Egan runs a small passenger plane service between Havana and Miami.
Mm-hmm. Probably a cover-up for smuggling activities.
Anyway, Chief, we'll be able to put an end to Egan's business tomorrow morning.
No, Peters, I'm not just interested in Egan and Rosa. It's obvious we can pick them up any time. No, there's somebody else, somebody who's masterminding this operation.
I guess you're right, Dave, but how to get to him?
Well, I'd say that's up to you, and how well you do on your third test, Mr. Kovac.
Yes?
Senor Gregor, this is Rosa.
What is it, Rosa?
I have been looking all over for Egan. He is nowhere to be found.
Egan is here with me, waiting for me out in the patio. I was just about to introduce him to my amusing piranha fish.
But you will need Egan to fly the plane.
I've made arrangements for another pilot. He will be here next week.
But I have for you a client who wishes a trip to the United States now.
The client will wait, Rosa.
But he is willing to pay $25,000.
Well, Rosa, that is a different man. It is fortunate you did not call me a few minutes late.
I made arrangements with the client for Egan to be at his hotel tomorrow morning at 10.
Very well, Rosa. Egan will be there. I will apologize to my piranha fish for the postponement.
There'll be no postponement, Mr. Egan.
Don't you worry about that, Kovac. You show up tonight in the back room at El Montero Cafe with the $25,000. And by this time tomorrow, you'll be safe and snug in the USA.
United States of America. I can hardly wait. Mr. Egan, I'm so grateful to you for... excuse me, please. Hello?
Senor Kovac, this is Rosa. Is Senor Egan there?
Oh, yes, he is. Senor Egan, it is Rosa. She wishes to speak with you.
Okay, thanks. Yeah, Rosa?
There is trouble. Do not betray yourself with words or looks.
Sure, Rosa. Go ahead.
A friend was just here in El Montero and told me about Senor Kovac. This morning at the hotel, there he saw the man who visited Kovac. The visitor was David Harding of the United States Counter Spies.
What? Thanks for telling me, Rosa. Thanks very much.
You seem troubled, Mr. Egan. Did Rosa have bad news?
Not exactly, Kovac. Coming like it did now, in a way it was good news.
Then everything will go as we arranged it.
Well, there'll be just one...
Jake! My arm! The more you're trying to get out of this grip, the more it's going to hurt.
I do not understand. Why are you doing this to me?
I'll explain just as soon as I get this gun out of your shoulder holster.
All right, now. Get back.
Up against that wall!
What is the meaning of this?
You can drop the act. Rosa phoned to tell me about some information she got on your visitor here this morning. Harding of the Counter Spies. What do you got to say for yourself now?
Just one thing, Egan. If you're smart, you'll drop that gun and give yourself up.
You think I'm crazy, Kovac?
Just to set you straight, the name is Peters.
A Counter Spy, too.
That's right, Egan.
So you want me to give myself over to you, that it?
It might go easier on you. If you do get away now, Egan, I'll get you anyway. I'll hound you till I get you.
That's where you're wrong, Peters. Your hounding days are over. I'm getting out of here.
But you're not.
You fool, Egan. Murdering a counter spy, you stupid, idiotic fool.
What did you expect me to do, Gregor? Let him take me in?
This will ruin everything.
So I'll lay low where they won't find me.
Don't you realize now the counter spies will find you wherever you go? They won't rest until you're captured.
I thought you were so smart, Gregor. I thought you had a way of handling everything.
Of course. There is a way of handling this. Now that you're here, I have nothing to worry about.
What? What's the idea of that gun?
The idea, Egan, is self-preservation. If you were ever captured, you would blurt out my part in the smuggling business.
No. No, Gregor. You can trust me.
I had intended to rid myself of you last night. You were saved by the fat, disgusting swine, Rosa. Now I'll take up where I left off.
Gregor, please. Don't shoot.
I'm not going to shoot, Egan. Huh? I'm just taking you to the edge of the pool over there. Then I'll leave it to my piranha fish to destroy all evidence of your being. You will commence walking to the... Buonasera,
Senor Egan. Rosa, you threw that knife into Gregor.
Si.
But why? You were on his side.
That you do not understand how a woman feels to be talked to the way Senor Gregor always talked to me. I am not so young. I am not so
fat, so disgusting as he said. I have been waiting for such an opportunity as this to answer Senor Gregor.
Hey, he's still alive.
See, I aimed my knife so that he should not die so painless.
I'll get his gun and finish him off.
Wait! Do not fire that gun.
But
we will feed him to his cannibal fish.
In the pond? Now look, Rosa, I can't...
I have saved your life. You will do as I wish, no?
Okay, I guess I owe it to you.
Drag him across the patio by the feet.
Yeah.
Even a woman such as I has feelings. He should not have talked me that way.
Stop where you are. Don't move. Keep him covered, Peters. Got him, Mr. Harding.
Peters?
Senor Kovac, you're alive.
Sorry to disappoint you two.
It can't be. I fired two shots into you.
Those were blanked in Peters' gun, Egan. They were in there waiting for you to use them.
It is a trick.
That's right, Rosa. It was a member of the Cuban secret police who informed you that I'd visited Kovac's room. We wanted you to tip off Egan so he would lead us to the head smuggler.
Here we are, thanks to those blanks.
Okay, but the slugs in this gun aren't blank.
Drop that gun, Egan. You don't have a chance.
I got nothing to lose. We're making a try.
Stop, Egan. All right, Peters, let it happen.
Peter's that injured?
Yes, Chief. Nobody can live with those piranha fish.
You can call the Cuban police now. Tell them to come out for Rosa and Gregor. And we'll fly back home.
Tune in every Tuesday and Thursday, same time, same station, to Counter Spy.
Counter Spy on Tuned to Yesterday from April 11th, 1950 on ABC. That wraps this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVillier. Thanks for listening.